Alright, another Joshi 2010s episode here at the Red Leaf Retrocast. It's the Patreon. I am JD. You are K. Let's talk some Ice Ribbon.
Ice Ribbon, my favorite promotion.
It's definitely one we are hitting quite a lot in these Joshi 2010s. Makes sense. We both like Ice Ribbon. We're one of the few podcasts out there that cover Ice Ribbon on a regular.
But we're the only one, I think. I don't think anyone else even talks about Ice Ribbon. They maybe passingly mention Ice Ribbon.
You're probably right. I'm not aware of any, actually, now that I think about it.
I think only the Park Man over on his Patreon Joshi podcast even mentions Ice Ribbon.
I think you're right. That would be the Fight Game Media Patreon. I do recommend it. They just started.
What are we plugging
their stuff for? That is dumb.
We should be plugging our stuff.
If you're listening on the Big Egg Joshi podcast, for the free version that came out 2 weeks later, you can get these episodes half a month early. How's that for a nice little advertisement there? Half a month early, you get these episodes along with our wrestler rankings debates. Does K think that Mina Shirakawa is possibly better than Ryo Mizunami? Find out over there.
Hey, go check it out. We know if you agree.
We have fun. We have fun with that. Also over on the Patreon, you have awesome JD Star reviews, Kay. Tell us more about that.
So I'm covering JD Star started in the year 2001 when they have their big shift from being a wrestling promotion to a idol wrestling promotion that hires actresses, and they call it the Astress program. Very interesting stuff over there.
And I do LLPW reviews. Just started that a couple months ago. Off to a good start with that. Got my girl Norio Tateno hanging out over there. Can you see why?
Yeah, I can see why you checked that out, your Tateno mark.
Look, man, we do AJW Destiny, and I love me some Tateno. I love me some Yumi Ogura.
Overachieving mid-carders.
Look, man,
I
love DIY promotions. It's why I like Dragon Gate. It's why I like Ice Ribbon. And we're here to talk Ice Ribbon, Joshi 2010s. This is a night from 2011. And it took place on February 6th, 2011, from Tokyo at Imaike Gas Hall. Hope I pronounced that right.
I don't even know, man. I just know when we saw the venue originally watching this, I thought it was that boat racing place that Stardom had run, because it had the stage and everything, the wooden stage and the curtain. And I was like, oh, that's the same venue. And I looked it up, and no, it's not the same venue. I don't know if this venue is even still in service, because I could find absolutely nothing on it, and no other promotions have run this outside of Ice Ribbon.
It's a very strange place. There's it has the big. It looks like a theater type area.
Yeah, it looks like a big theater, like where you'd see like production plays and stuff.
Yeah, because there were no seatings to the sides. There was no seating behind the ring, like from the hard cam, and it was only an upper stage area.
And it was the big curtain and the wooden stage and like the stage lights underneath and everything.
Filled out pretty well though, 211 according to the Cage Matchu.
And the crowd was reacting to everything too, which is good. I mean, it's so weird hearing crowds react to stuff since we're in modern times, and at least in Japan, crowds still aren't reacting to things all the time.
No, they're not. They're very well behaved. We'll call it that way. But this is our
well behaved.
This is our second iteration of Ice Ribbon into the year 2011. A lot of promotions start off slow to start off years, but Ice Ribbon, they're quick in January. They're quick in February. They're always doing something, despite being probably one of the lesser known promotions of the era and building to the 2010s. Which is interesting when I kind of compare and contrast a lot of things.
It's like I think the formula is more or less the same. I guess we'll find out more as we continue to cover them in this year. But kind of like the springtime, which you would think would be a big time, is kind of like their sort of slowdown period. They're really hot in the beginning of the winter and really hot in the summer. And then they kind of cool down a little in the fall and heat back up. It's kind of interesting because they're like the opposite of most promotions. They do it the opposite direction.
Everything heats up
in the fall and summer.
I think you're right, because I'm looking at schedule of what we have for 2011 to cover, and it's like spring and fall during the big holidays like Golden Week and whatnot. It looks like that's what a lot of promotions build towards, at least in this era. Maybe that's worth a conversation and an extra look at of how these promotions schedule themselves out for their bigger events. That is definitely something. In fact, I'm going to make a note of that.
I mean, just look at it. Look at what we have coming up here in real time. We have August is the Princess Cup and the beginning of the Five Star. That's the end of summer going into fall. There's Ice Ribbon. They got their Yokohama in summer, and then they just cool down until winter. Not that they're not running big shows, but they don't really do anything massive until Ribbon Mania at the end of the year.
Yeah, once Yokohama Ribbon is up, then it's not really a cool down period, but
no, it's just more steady until they ramp it up. Yeah. Like it's like they go from red hot to mildly cool, and then right back to red hot when they need to.
Yeah. I think you're right. Yeah. That's a good one. So our last episode, we covered the birth of stardom, which was a really fun episode to do. Check that out. And
yeah, very interesting too.
Yeah, coming up later, the next couple episodes, it's going to be three different promotions in a row. We got Oz Academy, which is it's an interesting promotion to cover before 2015. We got JWP. We promised we're going to cover more of that based on what we learned and found out in 2010 of the state of them. And some more Wave. We're going to cover a few more shows of Wave going forward.
Yeah, this
bit.
Is also a famous year for JWP with a famous moment and show that we will eventually cover.
Yeah. That's going to be a fun way to kind of finish out 2011, to say the least. That's good stuff. So why are we covering this particular Ice Ribbon show? It is 262, as they go by numbers, and then they kind of give it a little wacky name. This is the one-night tag tournament. Why, Kay, did they do a one-night tag tournament?
Well, you see, they decided to redo the tag belts, and as a result, they had the tag belts up. I don't think they were vacated. I think the tag belts were just put up, so like, say the people that have the tag belts, they have to now defend them in the tournament. I believe that was the stipulation. But the tag belts go from these really shitty cardboard DIY belts to, well, the belts that we see today. Literally the exact same belts we see today. They looked newer in 2011. They're shiny and less beat up like they are nowadays.
Right. Tsukasa Fujimoto is the Ice Cross 60 champion. And checking the further schedule here, we will not be covering Tsukasa Fujimoto's first defense of the Ice Cross 60 title, or even the third, now that I'm looking at her defenses. Our next Ice Ribbon show won't be until August. So we go a ways.
Wow, because I think this is the run where she with the belt where she has like seven defenses or something nuts like that in a row.
Yes,
she drops the belt where she has like where she holds the record at that point for the most defenses. I mean, she still currently holds the record for most defenses, I believe.
Well, let me run through some of these like defenses, that. And it'll be clear why we're not covering them.
Yeah, probably very clear.
Okay, so here we go. First defense, February 23rd, Chi Tomiya. So that sounds okay. That's at 267, February 23rd. Not really a card worth seeking out when you look at it. Then she takes on and defeats Rei, which is a woman from Hong Kong.
And actually, that Rei is also in JWP.
Yes.
She still wrestles there? Pure J? I can't remember now. I think she does, or I think she recently retired or something like that.
Yeah, and she defends that title against Rei at Cork and Hall at March Ribbon, which is actually pretty good annual show for Ice Ribbon, but I don't think we could have gotten a hold of it. But nonetheless, Emi Sakura has an exhibition match against Momo Nakaishi. Taka Michinoku defeats Makoto. Shida takes on Shuri. Maybe this show is something worth seeking out.
Oh yeah, no, we definitely need to check that one out because that's the Shuri build-up thing when they did a whole tournament to decide who is Shuri's first opponent, and I believe that is the exact match right there.
Let's see if we can't slip that in at some point.
Yeah, I forgot that was the show. Yeah, because they made a big Smash. That was the first like really big deal that came out of Smash. I think the only big deal now that I think about it, because Kana and guy from Oh, God, I'm blanking on his name. From WWE, former guy from WWE.
Taka Michinoku.
No. Tajiri.
Oh, Tajiri,
Jesus,
that guy.
Christ. Why I keep wanting to think Funaki for some reason? That's like who kept coming to my brain. Tajiri.
He's the other one.
you got a point there. But Tajiri founded Smash, and Kana was there and kind of helped out. But she found Sherry. I don't think it's clear where she found Sherry, but she's the one that's credited as finding Sherry. And Sherry was like a big fucking deal. Big super rookie. And they made a big deal about it by having a tournament in Ice Ribbon to decide who faces her, and Sheeta won.
All right, I'm adding March Ribbon, those two matches. We got to at least see one of Tsukasa's defenses here, and the Ray one looks to be the best one.
It's at Korakuen, so it probably would be like the one that they probably put the most build up into, at least.
Yeah, so that's 275. Let's see if we can't get a hold of that. Make a note of that. I will make it known here now. I'm going to try to throw that into the episode where we cover Wave for the first time. I think that's fair. I think it's a good place to put
it. Yeah. Cover Wave and Ice Ribbon. Ice Wave.
Ooh, that's a good... I'm going to write that down too. Ice Wave. it sounds like a Pokemon attack.
I mean, I could have gone with Cold Wave.
No.
But that doesn't sound
as
cool.
Don't be ridiculous. Okay, after that is Sakushi. So she faces a child. Although
she might be an interesting one, actually, now that I think about it, because Sakushi's actually pretty good as a child. For a child, she's probably like one of the better wrestlers.
Just
on
like
roster.
Riho, I agree. And then she faces Miyako Matsumoto after that in May, shortly after Sakushi. She faces Sakushi again in June, called Ice Ribbon Teen 3. I don't think that's available anywhere.
I mean, kind of look, right?
Yeah, July, she faces Neko Nita.
Ooh, that'll be interesting, because Neko Nita is one of the, not unsung heroes of Ice Ribbon, but one of the wrestlers that's kind of underappreciated, like a hidden gem kind of one that she's considered. She retires way earlier than she probably should have.
2015,
I think she had, like,
it looks
back
like.
Issues. Neko Nita was actually pretty good. I've not seen a whole lot of her, but I do know she's, by people deep into Ice Ribbon, she's well regarded as like a hidden gem wrestler, someone who retired too early, was actually very good, but just couldn't stay healthy. Kind of like Yoko Bito, actually, when I think about it.
Well, she debuts March 2nd, so very, very young rookie getting a shot there a couple months into her career. Makoto after that in August, and then... We got the match I'm looking forward to, August 21st, which we are covering that one, so don't you worry. That's also the day Makoto has her last match in Ice Ribbon.
Yeah, she wanted to go freelance to try to try out the waters on her own. It didn't bode well for her.
No.
At least right off the bat, it doesn't.
So we'll try to get at least one of those. We'll get that Ice Wave episode going here.
Now that I think about it, we're gonna watch at least one Reina show. We have to watch at least one Reina show.
I don't want
Reina. That promotion still exists technically.
No. Refuse.
It exists technically. It's still operational.
Refuse to believe this.
It's kind of like how LPWX is still kind of existing. They have a roster, you know.
So I wanted
Doherty's still wrestling.
Yeah, I wanted to bring that up because the tag titles are such an emphasis in Ice Ribbon, because it's a great way to help train the wrestlers. It kind of brings about the be happy with pro wrestling moniker that they like pushing. It's a fun way to get like a duo across rather than the individual. And this little tournament on this night is, I think, a good representation of the fun with the promotion you can have. And there's still booking involved at the same time, which is something I really appreciate. It's not just, let's make a card, do something, and then we forget about it the next day. There was genuine purpose to this.
Yeah, those tag belts. I think I'd go out of my way and say they're probably the best booked tag belts in Joshi. Even nowadays. Because they're so... not protected. I mean, I guess they are really protected, like the singles belt is, but like everyone who wins them is a genuine team. It's not just usually two wrestlers slapped together like most other companies do. Ice Ribbon always makes emphasis to have tag teams with names and dynamics.
Well, it's also always too often in not just Joshi, but Pierrot, and even in the West, where the tag titles aren't considered the second most important titles of the promotion, or even the first, because there's very frequent where you'll see the tag titles main event shows for Ice Ribbon. They are big deals, and they don't hot potato these things. I think JWP might be the only other one at this moment in time that we could say that about. I honestly haven't watched enough. That's hard to say. Yeah, I haven't watched enough JWP, and that's why in this 2011, I really want to get these theories understood.
Right, like pre-2010, I think like early 2000s, I think those belts got hot potatoed quite often. So I wouldn't say that they have the best track record by comparison. But the thing, like you mentioned with the tag belts, they main event shows. I mean, for fuck's sake, Dropkickers, Aja Revolution, just those are just two teams right off the top of my head that held those belts. You know, Tsukushi and Kurumi, they're called We Are Ice Ribbon. They're the most dominant tag team to ever hold those belts, had the most defenses and most, I think, most individual reigns together. Just so many different teams in that company. They always make an emphasis to not just put them on two random people. I think it's important.
We Are Ice Ribbon sounds like a good name for us now.
I like that about
now.
Tag teams. Oh, yeah. Well, it's like, so, I forget where I came across it, but somebody did a graph, and I gotta find it now, but it was a Japanese graph that somebody translated of just the breakdown in branches just from the tag belts, the teams, and their individual dynamics with other people and other teams, and just, it was like a big family tree almost. It was very, very interesting just how they branch off and have their own dynamics with each other and other people, and then rivalries with other people from other teams, but then also have singles rivalries with them as well. It's Ice Ribbon does a very good job with that. I don't think any company even is remotely close to that.
Maybe Marvelous, except they don't have titles.
Yeah, so I don't know if I'd count them. They're also not, haven't been around long enough to have that kind of graph like Ice Ribbon had. It was a very giant, like large spider graph.
Yeah.
It's pretty crazy. So on, find it, man. It was very cool to look at.
So on this night, the teams are Makoto and Riho. Double Matsumoto, Hiroyo and Miyako are teaming up. Muscle Venus, that's Shida and Tsukasa Fujimoto. Ryo Mizunami and Mochi Miyagi are a team. And I think that's it. Yeah. That's it.
Yep, that's it.
So the two notable names not in the... Actually, three. Got to make this clear. Three notable names that aren't in this tournament. Emi Sakura, Chi Tomiya...
They're on the show.
...and Hikari Minami. So this was interesting. Okay. I wanted to do this in real time. Emi Sakura, go to her little cage match here. She debuted in August 95. Okay.
Yep. I think part of FMW, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was part of the FMW women's roster.
Damn right.
Like four people. Like four people on it, too. Her, Kudo, and Combat Toyota, like one other person nobody remembers. Listen, I don't remember.
Yeah. And one thing that's interesting is when you got a promotion that's kind of in, let's say, the state Ice Ribbon is, where it's not making, it doesn't seem like it's making a whole lot of money, not a whole lot of buzz. You, like, the normal kind of veteran move and owner of a promotion would be, oh, it's my 15th year anniversary, and they'd kind of plus minus a year. Or this show is to commemorate the tag titles of how many years of Ice Ribbon, which also correlates to how many years Emi Sakura would have. Just hear me out. And the move would be they're in the tournament and they go to the finals and lose or win or what have you. The point is the tournament's kind of all advertised around that veteran. Emi Sakura isn't even on the show, and I found that interesting.
No, actually, I don't... Just remembering, but I don't think she's on several shows in this year. But it's also her last year with Ice Ribbon before she splits with them. So,
I mean, she could put herself over and be the highlight on her way out. Yeah, we don't know.
She doesn't. She definitely doesn't do that, which is good.
I know.
It's a good thing that she doesn't do something like that.
It's very noticeable, and that's why we're talking about it. It's not what she does.
Because no one else really does that. Yeah, yeah. She's like the only the only one from that 90s generation, because I think the Nye was not too far before or after her who debuted. I think the Nye debuted maybe a few years after, like 97.
And she,
I mean, look at her. She doesn't even remotely do that. It's all about her and nothing but her.
While I think it's a training mentality, and it's an easy go-to to always market yourself or another veteran rather than the promotion, so to say. Because this could have been, again, one night tag team tournament, Emi Sakura's trial or something or another. Or I'm repeating myself, but you get the idea. And she didn't do any of that. It was all of this was the night about Muscle Venus.
Sure was putting over their big star, Tsukasa Fujimoto. You know, it's also kind of interesting because I just now remembered, I think Emi, Mako, and Nanai debuted, because I know both Emi and Mako debuted in 95. I still can't remember off the top of the head if Nanai debuted in 95 or 97. But they all kind of debuted around the same time, and that's why the whole Nanaiism, Satomorism, and Nanaiism, and the Sakurism comes from, like the different mindsets.
Yeah.
I feel like it's kind of funny only one of those has actually been successful.
We need to add Ozakiism in there.
No. She debuted way earlier than
that. Nah, come on. Let's talk about Ozakiism. I can't wait.
Yeah, okay.
It's good stuff. Got to vacate those titles.
Vacate them and have a tag team
okay.
match.
Okay, that's a great example. That's a great example, and it's very timely. So there's a Ozaki-gun produce show coming up with Oz Academy in 2021. Okay? And it also coincides with Ozaki's anniversary.
Sure
and
does.
What was her move? Well, I want the title involved with my anniversary. Is she going to win? It doesn't matter. The point is, her booking decision was to vacate the title and put herself in the main event. So whether she wins or loses at that point is a moot point.
You gotta be more specific. Maya won the belt, someone who's part of Sekigun, and she convinces her because she can't in storyline make Kaoru, or not Kaoru, Yoniyama, vacate the belt. So have someone from her faction win it, and then have them vacate it so that she can win it. Yay!
Or not, it doesn't matter. The title
She's
is now
winning that belt.
The title's a mute point. When you get to that level of booking and having the show about you, Emi Sakura doesn't do these things. It's always about putting the next generation over, and to have even a rival. Because who is Emi's rivals right now in the promotion? It's Riho and Fujimoto.
Fujimoto.
Who's the one on the rise? Hikaru Shida. Who is the one she put over last year? Hikari Minami. So what is Chitomiya is an interesting case. I'm still trying to figure out. She's definitely a highlighted person, always in wacky mid-card matches. The thing is, she's really tiny. She's like 4'9".
Not very long. Remember, her career is not very long.
Yeah, she's like 4'9". She's super tiny. But Hikari Minami is an interesting case. I've been trying to figure out what her role is, and I think I got it. And I will save that thought for when we get to the match she's involved with, why she isn't part of the tag tournament. But let's get this going. Karumi defeats Sakushi in the opener. Teenagers Fight, Part 2, 527. Sakushi goes for the Harukaze, little springboard roll-up after from the mid-rope, and Karumi reverses it. She learns her lesson, and she wins. I think one of her first wins, quote-unquote.
I can't be too sure, but I do know it's not called the Harukaze just yet.
It is in my mind.
Because that's what it becomes, obviously, when she gets about an inch taller.
Wow, really big growth spurt for Sakushi.
Jesus Christ, it's so funny just seeing child her and current her, and like the size difference, not that much.
I learned something today about Sakushi, Kay.
Oh, what'd you learn?
She has never had a major singles match against Risa Sera.
You are right. I think I remember mentioning this to you a little ways back. remember when, but I think I remember mentioning that to you when we were talking at one point, that she and Hermes and Sarah are one of the few sort of people that haven't crossed paths, really.
Very strange.
They have wrestled, but they haven't had a big time singles match.
Yeah, it's never been like this main event on a show, which is very surprising.
Yeah, I think that's, I don't know if that's done on purpose or not. I can't even remember now. I just think it's one of those very interesting matches that I don't think they were trying to save for anything. I think it was just how things ended up being.
It's funny how that usually is the case, where they purposely keep people apart and then just so much time passes as you go, oh, oops.
Well, I think it was, I don't want to say it was done deliberately, because, I mean, who books that far out? But I think it was just the thing that they were both on two different trajectories and tracks in terms of the promotion, just in two different kind of spaces on the card. They constantly flop at different times. You look at who was on top and who wasn't, and then who was on top and then the other one wasn't.
Well, there was one timeline. I know we're getting a little off track of what this tag tournament is, but we're on the topic of Tsukushi, who's a big force in Ice Ribbon, so she is worth talking about and exploring. The one theory I saw floated around was when Risa Serra was champion, that was about, I think I got this right, that was about the time Tsukushi had her incident with one Kagetsu, and things happened, and that possibly prevented a big time match from
happening.
I don't think
that lines up, because the incident was about 2018 and 2017 ish, and I don't think she was champion until I think Tsukasa was. Could be mistaken, though. I could be mistaken. I don't remember now that I think about it.
It's worth kind of keeping in the back of our minds. But yeah, that's something to kind of pay attention to as we go through Ice Ribbon, is because Risa Serra debuts in 2012, I think. And
he dies November 2012, actually.
Yeah, we'll see how their paths apparently not cross.
they do wrestle each other a few times.
Well, yes,
just
but
never
not
in high profile singles matches.
Yeah. All right, first tag title semifinal match, going straight to the semis.
Oh, you are correct, actually. I just now looked it up. You are right. She did held the belt in 2017. I forgot she loses it at Ribbon Mania that year.
There you go.
That's why I forget that she didn't have the belt.
There you go. Makoto and Riho take on and defeat Double Matsumoto. That's Hiroyo and Miyako. 15 minutes, 16 seconds. This flew by.
Yeah, definitely not Miyako's worst performance.
No, she's good in, she, you know what? She's good in tag matches. I like watching her in tag matches.
Are you praising Miyako?
No, Makoto. Miyako and Hiroyo were good as heels in this, which was fun. And Miyako, she's a good like little shit talking heel, and she's got the big heater Hiroyo to go along with it. I think it worked out great.
I mean, because I would say that because I said that this wasn't the worst Miyako match I had seen.
This team of Makoto and Riho, you wouldn't think it would work out too well, but Makoto is kind of slow and not the most athletic person in the world. And Riho is definitely much faster than her. It's a good dynamic, I think, worked out for the best.
Yeah, she's doing a lot of big boot style.
She's got
her
boot
legs.
Style, yeah.
We got to talk about her gear. So she's wearing some very revealing gear for her legs. And her legs are so skinny that I kind of wish she just put some pants on, because it's so weird looking compared.
See, it's not
her body proportions are weird.
It's not the legs that bother me, it's the bony knees.
That's the part that gets me. It's those bony knees. It's like, oh man, ooh. What are we doing here?
Yeah, maybe Makoto skips leg day or something, but yeah. The gear is like the LCO accentuate the legs, but they're not in the most meaty shape. If that's even a way to describe it.
She needs to put a little bit more weight on them legs, the knees especially.
It's funny.
Don't worry, she does though. She does later.
Yeah, but I really like this match. Hiroyo and Riho is definitely something I'd look forward to paying attention to in the future. But I guess we'd have to go to Gato Move to watch that. And gotta be honest, don't really want to do that.
Well, eventually we have to hit up some early Gato Move and get a hold of it.
Kind of don't want to.
Get close to it. I'm at least going to watch their first show.
I guess.
Post Ice Ribbon Emmy career is interesting.
the next
Taiwan. I think she goes to Thailand a lot. Not Taiwan, yeah. Taiwan. Thailand a lot and wrestles.
Yeah, I was when I discovered Gato Move, I was YouTube searching just promotions and came across, I was like, oh, the wrestling promotion in Thailand. Little did I know.
Little did you know.
I was like, this Riho is really good.
She's totally not wonderbred and boring in every way.
You're terrible. Terrible person. Muscle Venus, Shida, and Fujimoto take on and defeat Ryu Mizunami in her best Sendai slash wave gear that looks like Kane's gear from like 1998.
Yeah, it looks exactly. She's just missing the black glove and mask.
And Gauru Mochi Miyagi with cargo pants.
cargo pants and like the worst looking bedazzled silver tank top.
Mochi Miyagi's gear, man. Less than desirable. Her moveset is literally a shoulder block. We're done.
She tries a few times to do a pile driver, to which Fujimoto was like, no, no, no. I am not taking this from you. You have had literally 5 matches.
Yeah, we're not. Look, this isn't WCW where fucking Bryan Adams slash Crush is going to give people a fucking spike pile driver when he's the worst person to probably do that. Mochi Miyagi can tease it all she wants. Don't do it, though.
No, Sakata's like, no, 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 no. You can tease the spot, but I ain't taking that. Not with you. Not with 5 years, only 5 matches.
What'd you think of Ryo Mizunami in this match? Because this is interesting. She's against Shida and Tsukasa, and she's got a lot of speed.
She's got a lot of speed, but she doesn't really... She's not any different than we saw her in Wave, really. It's kind of like she has really good, a really basic skill set. Right? Which is what you expect from a Sendai wrestler, but she doesn't really stand out. Which is another Sendai problem, right? Because she kind of has the Kagetsu problem. She has a lot of really solid fundamentals, some really good, solid-looking moves. But she's not really, like, somebody I'd peg. At this point, I wouldn't peg her for much of anything outside of, like, a mid-card role because of just how Sendai presents its wrestlers.
Yeah, she doesn't come across with a whole lot of charisma here, but she's definitely a good wrestler to keep an eye out for. But I know what you mean, and I agree. The way Sendai presents their wrestlers, they really, when they go visit a promotion like an Ice Ribbon, they really stand out like a sore thumb, where they're just so bare bones to the basics of pro wrestling that they end up just being this kind of, well, I mean, you mentioned Wonder Bread with Riho. That is untrue. That's what this would be better described as. Like, you can be a wrestler, but if you don't have the character and a way to stand out outside those ropes to your audience, you're just going to be the wrestler, and that's not good enough.
So, you know what I just realized? Just remembering back on what we watched. So, I feel like not much in terms of in-ring, outside of maybe the few, like, cool pose gestures she does, like the rope walk thing that she does when she pulls the rope and everything, the imaginary rope. It has all the charisma. Her moveset is more or less the same.
Well, you see that, I mean, with a lot of wrestlers.
But the thing is, like, Kagetsu came from the same system. It was very basic. But then you look at her in Stardom, and her moveset is 100% different. She reinvented her entire moveset. Which is, I mean, kudos to her, because that's probably very difficult to do, to unlearn and relearn new things. Just now kind of put that together that Ryu Mizunami didn't exactly do that. She kind of built on it, but her moveset's more or less just the same because she spent so long on that system. I like Andres Miyagi, to now that I think about it, where she's her moveset is just because she spent so long in Sendai, that's the moveset she knows. And so instead of going through the hard work of relearning new things like Agetsu did, she just kind of just does that. Maybe adds on a few moves to it, but that's it. Basic moveset.
Oh, there's a lot of things about Ryo Mizunami that is very much appealing to me, and I think the ring game is fine. It was just the career. Like, I agree. There's a ceiling with that sort of style. I think it just best suits her to what she's capable of doing, because she's not going to be doing, you know, moonsaults off the top, but she can do a leg drop, and I think that's okay. So when you add the charisma to it, that's where it gets appealing, and I think that's fine. She's just clearly missing that in 2011. So the people that stand out is Shida, who is just exploding off the screen the more time goes on, and Fujimoto is just becoming this incredible fan favorite.
Yeah, Tsukasa at this point is the most over star outside of Emi Sakura and Riho. I think she's right up there with those two.
Yeah.
At this point, she's... I don't think they've named her Ace at this point. I think it's too early. But I do know eventually she gets just named Ace. And everyone's like, yeah, of course, she's the best wrestler on the roster. I mean, that's still true even today. With people like Maya on the roster, she's still somehow, the at almost 40 years old, the best wrestler in the world and one of the and the best on the roster.
So Shida and Fujimoto,
put there, top five, all like regardless of gender in terms of best in the world, she's just that good.
So Shida and Fujimoto, when they got in the ring and did their poses and something that was very noticeable. You know, I mentioned this with Shida beforehand at the end of the 2010s, or just 2010 in general. Now you notice it with Fujimoto. They got abs. They are in...
They got the abs game.
Phenomenal, ripped, lean shape. And they aren't the only two. Riho kind of has it going on. Hikari Minami kind of has it going on. And I want to say... there was someone else that also had that. I think Sakushi was like weirdly showing like great in shape muscle definition already.
Kind of hard to tell because her gear is like she's like wearing a schoolgirl outfit.
Yeah, it's tough to tell, but the crazy amount of cardio and training that they're doing to put their bodies in this like just very just strong shape. That's what it is. It's a strong shape. It's quite impressive. Something happened in the training between like July 2010 and now, and Shida was the most obvious that you saw right away, but now you're seeing it throughout kind of the rest of the roster. Why do you think that is?
So I don't remember, because there's not an exact time frame given to when the dojo was taken over, the dojo system was taken over by Shida and Tsukasa, but I want to say that might have something to do with it. They're obviously not running the promotion just yet. That doesn't happen until Emi leaves. But there's always been this sort of theory that the training backstage was done by those two way earlier before Emi left. Because I think they already knew Emi was leaving. It's always been the thought, because they were so well prepared after her departure that it almost felt like it was planned in advance.
I think we found the time frame then.
Right, but the thing is, it's not exact. There's never been an exact time frame when things happen, because nothing's been outwardly said. Because if you think about it, Risa Sera would be in the dojo at this point training. She'd be still be in training rookie before she debuted. It's usually what, about a year of this, typically 6 months to a year. So if they're training her and she's credited as being trained by Tsukasa and Shida, then that would make a lot of sense that happened much earlier on.
Yeah, so this kind of makes sense with the time frame that we're putting everything together. The puzzle pieces are fitting.
I think about it, the training's done by Sakushi now, so they went from an abs company to a shoulders company.
Yeah, you're right. Whoever's in charge of this training, you notice what body parts are the most focused. With Sakushi, it's them shoulders, and with Shida, it's them abs. And it's very noticeable. Kidding. Oh, man. Very fun match. I enjoyed what Mizunami was able to bring when Mochi was not in the ring. That's when it was strongest. Look, I like Mochi.
She's only five
Mochi
matches in, so.
I'm a Mochi fan, but she's not in the greatest shape yet. Maybe Fujimoto and Shida are going to whip her into shape, get the Gauru out of her.
No, that never leaves.
Oh, man. Chitomiya defeats the Neo rookie, who now does not have a promotion, Mika Iida. 6:43. Not bad. I'm interested in following this Mika Iida. I wonder how long she sticks around. Don't look it up, Kay.
I mean, how'd you know? I think we were wondering where she came from initially, and I looked it up. Like, oh yeah, she was with the rookie, but she didn't stand out compared to like everyone else. And I think that's why we forgot that she existed, because she just didn't stand out. I mean, now she stands out, but kind of weird that she didn't stand out at the end there, at the end of Neo.
No, I mean, it's not like there were many rookies to stand out in Neo in the first place, but it's interesting that Ice Ribbon's the first place that we see these former Neo players show up. when Wave has the reputation of the being the freelance promotion.
Actually, I do believe her first promotion she wouldn't do after was Wave.
Well, I don't doubt that, but we're seeing her first in Ice Ribbon, and perhaps perhaps Emmy was the one that kind of spoke her up and got her in here, which wouldn't shock me.
Like, you could be right. You could be 100% right. But I feel like, I mean, again, I'm not looking it up, but I feel like she was probably in Wave like first right off the gate. Seems like you wouldn't get your first bookings all the way in February.
All right, fine. Go look this up.
Before I have to go without money, and especially in this state of the industry at this point, 2011.
Okay. Neo Stage Door, which we covered. Very enjoyable. Miki Ida's last Neo match was against Kagetsu. And her first booking after that was indeed Ice Ribbon, January 8th against the Ham.
Oh, okay. Okay, there you go then. And we told me we had to look it up and look at you over here looking it up to make
sure.
Well,
I mean, you were just like, I bet she was in Wave and whatever. I'm like, I don't know about that.
Well, I wasn't looking it up. I just assumed because Wave takes on everybody's rejects and Lost Toys.
She doesn't show up in Wave until February 13th after quite a lot many bookings in Ice Ribbon. And she loses to Ayumi Kurihara.
Oh, that's where she ends up, in the Wave.
No, she continues. It's like Ice Ribbon for a while, and then it's a hodgepodge from there.
Sounds like a freelancer. Sounds about right.
Sounds like a freelancer, and Ice Ribbon was the one that got her on her feet out of the gate, which is good. So I have a theory that's an Emi Sakura move. That's what it sounds like to me. And she's in the mid-card here against Chitomiya. Nice little mid-card match. I have nothing bad to say about it, really.
It was fine. It definitely wasn't like the strongest match on the card. No. It was fine.
You know what was the strongest match on the card? In pure anime strength?
Anime? Do you mean Ultraman Sentai strength?
That's right. Kentaro teams with Ultraman Robin to take on the, I guess, good guys? Hikari Minami and Ken Oka. Things go awry in this match.
Ken Oka, so hard.
This is the most Ice Ribbon match you can imagine. It's like Community Theater 101. Ken Oka and Gentaro start us off, and they're teasing this Hikari Minami Ultraman battle of the century. They get in, they stare for each other, and then the music hits. Some Ultraman enemy music. This guy comes out, and he brainwashes using like the Force or whatever. To make Gentaro and Ken Oka evil minions of his force, and therefore this match goes to a no contest because they have to now change teams. So now it's Ultraman teaming with Minami to take on the brainwashed Gentaro and Ken Oka.
So let me nerd out for a bit second.
All right,
so
whatever.
We first saw the villain. I was assured that he was an Ultraman villain, and I tried to find out who it was. Cause like these are all crude, totally not the character costumes, as legally distinct as they could possibly be. Like our Ultraman Robin here is doing his best not Ultraman Leo impression.
He's definitely doing a lot of the poses.
He's doing all the poses. It's great. So I looked it up and couldn't find any Ultraman villain. I thought a Kamen Rider villain. So he's a Kamen Rider villain. I was like, oh, okay, of course that makes sense. He looks like a Kamen Rider villain. That makes sense.
So very wacky. Crowd is... they're into it a little bit. They're laughing. They're having a good time. Both these goofy little matches go 5 minutes. Hikari Minami slaps, I think it's Ken Oka, back into his senses. They do some like Ultraman poses and... they do some like telepathy, like the throwing up the X pose, and then
That's the Ultra Beam.
Powering up, and the beam hits Gentaro out of the way, kind of situation. Hikari Minami slaps Oka. He's like, Hikari, like save me, and he charges at her, and she cutie suplexes him and pins him.
That's not an X. It's an L pose technically, and
whatever.
It's the Ultra Beam.
Whatever. Okay, so I have a theory behind this. Hikari Minami is kind of one of the more pushed products in Ice Ribbon. I get the feeling they want to make her like part of the core four, let's call it.
Tell me she's an Ultraman, Mark. I believe you.
I'm sure. I think these things are booked the way they are to try to bring out charisma and character to make the fans care about them more. And one thing I think we noticed from Hikari Minami is she doesn't have the most... her personality doesn't explode out of the ropes quite like the other three. So having a match like this to get her more comfortable in expressing to the audience, I think, is the purpose. And it's fun. If I'm trying to psychoanalyze this Ultraman match.
I think you're thinking way too deep. I think it was just a fun, goofy Ultraman match with a Kamen Rider villain somewhere in there.
I like my psychoanalyzing of Ultraman tag matches.
Hey, listen. I was marking out for not Ultraman Leo / maybe Ultraman Zero. It was very unclear that the helmet design in the front was Leo, but the horns weren't up. They were kind of to the back, kind of like Zero. So, legally distinct Ultraman guy. Yeah, he was wearing like the costume from like old ass, like the third iteration of Ultraman.
Yeah, I kind of wish there was a couple more teams in the tournament, but I guess the four teams is kind of what they had to do for the night. Anyways, main evento, really good. I really like this match. It's Muscle Venus taking on Makoto and Riho. Goes just under 16 minutes. Team Abs on display here, playing a little bit of heels against Riho, which was interesting. And they beat the hell out of Makoto. And what's most notable to me coming out of this match is Riho's frustrated, and Hikaru Shida now has her moves. She has the Falcon Arrow and the Tomashi. It has debuted. And when I'm talking Falcon Arrow, no match can end without a Falcon Arrow near fall. And the Tomashi, she does the pose, she runs the ropes, and hits that flying knee. She's got it. She's got it, Kay. This is the Shida.
This is the Shida. Now, she hasn't put it all together yet to where it kind of is cohesive and it's snappy, like we would see later. She's also kind of missing some of those kicks. I know there's some moves that she used to do that she doesn't do anymore, like the really gnarly kind of superplex spot she used to be known for. She would kind of like Micah style superplex somebody, and it was always like really gnarly looking. She doesn't do that anymore. Probably for the best. Her back probably thanks her for that.
Well, she is trying to show off more feats of strength to go with her sick abs, but she's clearly not a shoulders person like Tsukushi.
Tsukushi never skips shoulders day.
Which is funny considering how tiny she is.
Yeah, but you tell her that to her face, she'll slap the shit out of you so
nah,
hard.
She'll forearm my throat. That's what she'll do.
She'll forearm you so hard, she'll knock the wind out of you. Jesus Christ, those forearms are stiff.
But man, I love this match. The Tsukasa Riho versus each other is super fun and interesting to watch. It's like watching two people trained by Emi Sakura. What a weird concept.
Yeah, it's kind of akin to what we see with modern-day Tsukasa versus Tsukushi. It's like they have such perfect chemistry. It's very unreal. It's like, damn, just flawless movement. I mean, obviously the Tsukushi one is a little bit more flawless because they've had more years together. And Tsukasa is top of her game currently, whereas at this point she's not yet there. But that's what came to my head, seeing that whole dynamic between the two. I was like, oh man, this is kind of like a little bit of a earlier version of that.
Yeah, it's pretty cool to see. There's a lot to love here. Makoto, she hung in there, but she was definitely the fall girl, as she should be in a match like this. Let's be honest.
It's also the weakest part of the match.
Yes.
Overall, it was very... I mean, it's not surprising. I think I've mentioned this before, but Makoto goes to this period of time where she's just god-awful. She becomes a god-awful freelancer. She doesn't really pick it up until, like, fucking 2019, 2018. Years later, it's kind of really, I don't know what took her so long, really.
Well, she's hanging in there now, and she's we're seeing gradual improvement, but it's definitely slow.
She has a period of time where she just craters. I do remember that watching a Makoto match, and God, I want to say 2017 or 16, and she was fucking the pits. I was like, oh my God, who the fuck is this person? She sucks.
But
that being the reaction I had to her.
Yeah, so Muscle Venus wins. Crowd really loved the Sheeta finish sequence. Sheeta's over. She's improving every month, and it's really fun to see. Don't get me wrong, she's still pretty rough, but you definitely see the appeal and the improvement, and that's half the fun, is seeing these wrestlers develop, and you follow their journey, and Sheeta is gunning for the title, which brings up a question, now that we looked at the Fujimoto title defenses. No Sheeta match, and no Riho match.
Oh, no, Sheeta's off being more focused with Sherry for most of the year, if memory serves, with her and Sherry become a tag team. I think they take the tag belts as well, the international tag belts and the JWP tag belts. I could be, I'm trying to remember off the top of my head. I don't want to look it up, obviously, so I don't spoil things. But I do remember those two have a tag team title run or two, and they become a big thing of the scene.
How about that? We got something to look forward to.
Can't wait to watch that Shuri match. I've never seen that Shuri Sheeta match, so I'm excited to watch that.
We got to get our hands on it then. Needs to be. Well, this was super fun. Our next episode is Oz Academy, the show called Puppy. Big tag.
What?
Oh yeah. Don't ask. I don't know why it's named that. But we have a January 9th tag title match, which is allegedly a match of the year contender. Which isn't on that show. It's on the January 9th show. We're doing the February 11th one, and the tag titles are on the line yet again. So I do have the January 9th match, Mr. K.
Okay, cool. Because I was saying, you're not going to mention it, you're not going to watch that. I can't say match of the year candidate and be like, ah, but who cares?
Yeah,
who's
but
gonna
who cares?
Watch match of the year candidate?
Whatever, it's Oz Academy.
Well, listen, at this point, it's not like there's Sendai, where it's like, oh, Sendai, yeah, who cares?
And that does it for us. If you are listening on the Big Egg Joshi podcast, consider checking out the podcast proper, Red Leaf Retrocast, for all your Joshi needs. And we'll see you next time.
See ya.